To see examples of what we talked about on the show, along with further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
In the beginning of Thor, it's basically Don Blake finds the hammer and turns into Thor, but later on, didn't like something happen with Odin where Odin basically turned Thor, you know, combined Thor and Don Blake so they weren't two separate people?
Odin's the OG.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Two Dimension Comics, the podcast with no direction. This is episode number 117. I'm your host, Dallas Busha, and today on our glorious roundtable, oh, we're going backwards, aren't we? We've got, go!
Desmond.
Don.
Al.
Yeah. All right, we got the boys here. Once again, Rook is missing.
The boys are back in town.
The boys, is that boys?
Boys.
So what's up, guys? How's everybody doing?
Not bad.
I'm sitting up in my chair. I'm pumped about this.
I was doing good until I heard the overexcited entrance.
Another rainy day. Oh, my gosh. We just do podcasts on rainy days.
Are we living in Washington State now?
But you know, rainy days and Mondays really bring me down. Or never bring me down.
Like Garfield.
That's real.
Dallas the Carpenters was a brother and sister action.
I love the running gag of Dallas being ignorant.
Ignorant, that's right.
And Karen Carpenter's ignorant blanket. Drums and, you know,
and they both had those big, really creepy smiles.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, this is episode number 117, and we're going to talk comics, I think, this episode. Last
this
one.
Is big episode 117.
This is big, 117, baby, is that big app.
Okay.
All right. We're going to talk comic books because last time we had some really great talks, but nothing specifically comic centric. And I know all of us have been reading a lot of books lately, and I think we've got some stuff to talk about.
Or looking at pictures.
Yes, that's what comic books are all about.
That's right. That's all we have.
Glorious pictures.
And words.
Let me just say, I just had Guardians of the Galaxy on the movie when the boys got here, and Don has not seen the movie, but he's absolutely furious that Chris Pratt is playing Star-Lord, and he wouldn't let us watch it. I'm pretty sure he slapped me. He covered Dez's eyes. He's like, "That's not Star-Lord. Do not watch this movie."
No, when I say that, I'm not bagging on the actor. That's all fine. Al said something about he looks like the Rocketeer, and I said, "Who is that?" And then you said Star-Lord, and that's when I started yelling, "That is not Star-Lord. Turn it off right now. That is not Star-Lord."
So I need you to make a note in your little note page over there to add a picture of the original Star-Lord from Marvel Comics on our page. You know, you can find our blog at bunchofdorks.com. Click on the Cyclops to go to our section. And then for episode 117, you can see a picture of Star-Lord as he was originally intended. Drawn by John Byrne. Back
inked
in the
by
70s.
Inked by
freaking Terry Austin.
That's written by Chris Claremont.
In glorious black and white.
Are you sure it wasn't X-Men?
It's the team that became the X-Men team.
Oh.
That was their first...
Terry Austin...
Oh, I know. That's why I said, "Are you sure it's not the X-Men?"
Terry Austin didn't want to do the X-Men.
Really?
And he did that work with John Byrne and Chris Claremont, and they loved Star-Lord. And that's all he was interested in doing. And then John Byrne moved over to X-Men, which Chris Claremont had been writing. And Terry Austin wasn't interested, and later he said it. He thought about it. So, well, actually, you know, this X-Men can go to space. They can go anywhere they want.
John Byrne's first episode or issue, which I want to say was 108 maybe or something like that, was X-Men in space. You know?
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's...
I don't think it was 108. I think it was later. Right.
Is that the Dark Phoenix saga?
No. It was the Imperial Guard.
Oh, the Imperial. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Cockrum started it, and they stepped in.
The M-Crane crystal and all that jazz.
Oh, yes.
That's right.
All that jazz.
All that jazz.
But I was being silly because I don't really care what Star Wars looks like in the movie. And
you are silly.
The movie looked actually like a lot of fun.
Incredibly entertaining movie, and I have to say it might be my favorite Marvel movie thus far. Now, Avengers 2 isn't coming out for another 3 months, so that might top it.
That's right.
But, Guardians was a really fun movie, and the thing that caught me with that, besides the soundtrack, which Al had to point out, which is fantastic, classic rock soundtrack, which is very complimentary of the movie, just the dry humor, and it's freaking hilarious. The funniest of the Marvel movies.
I thought your favorite Marvel movie was that first Fantastic Four.
No, it's the original Captain America.
Red Brown.
Well, that was the late
70s. Late 70s.
Oh, is that when it was?
Yeah, you said something about the Guardians of the Galaxy. You were surprised because it's like it was fun and they took a chance. It wasn't the...
Yes.
It wasn't the big names. It wasn't another Spider-Man reboot or how Dez put it earlier. You know, another reboot of the same old franchise.
Well, yeah, we talked about it before. Those reboots are basically so the studio doesn't lose the
right.
Right.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah. So that's the only reason they
because if they don't release a movie every X amount of years, and the rights I think revert to the original owners.
Marvel.
Yeah. Marvel's aching for.
Yeah, that's true.
But people must be going to movies. They must be making money to do.
They are.
But it is interesting news. None of this is extremely breaking news, but Marvel Studios now has rights to Spider-Man. They're working in cahoots with Sony Pictures so that Spider-Man, the character, will be in the new Marvel movies.
Right.
So Spider-Man will be alongside Captain America and Iron Man and the Hulk. Yeah.
Oh, really? So they cut a deal. Huh?
Yeah, they cut a deal. I mean, Sony is still has the majority of the movie rights, and they can still release solo film projects with Spider-Man. But apparently so can Marvel Studios.
And what was the deal with Marvel? They're pissed off at Fox for putting out a Fantastic Four movie, so they don't want to promote it, and that's why they canceled the book or something like that.
They're canceling all the toys and all the any kind of promotion that for X-Men and Fantastic Four. That's probably why they're doing a reboot of all... Like, remember how they're killing off all the main characters? Like Wolverine?
You're right. Yeah,
yeah, they're trying to push forward Inhumans and all these titles that Marvel owns 100%. I read that Marvel doesn't want to push out Fantastic Four and X-Men if they're only going to get like proceeds of like maybe 5%.
They're going to get a small percentage.
Yeah, a small percentage. So if they're getting 100% of like Avengers and all the other stuff that they own, why don't they do that instead of putting a lot of hard work into X-Men and Fantastic Four, which they get little?
Wow, but that's such a massive franchise, the X-Men franchise. And the Fantastic Four, not so much, unfortunately, these days. But I mean, just... That shit's legendary.
That sounds like more like
it's
Disney.
Business. That's all business.
Disney business.
Yeah,
it is.
There's not like a whole lot of Disney business going on there. Well, they're forcing them to maybe cut a deal. Like you said, they cut a deal with Sony.
Right, and they're probably trying to
Spider-Man.
And they're probably trying to do something similar with Fox Studios. You know?
Exactly. Yeah, because it would be nice if the FF could meet up with everybody else too. You know, like.
I think that's what most people want. They want Fox Studios to fail, so all the rights will be reverted back to Marvel, like Daredevil, Elektra, maybe Ghost Rider. I can't remember if that's
I think Marvel Studios might now retain the rights to Daredevil, because Daredevil has a new television show on Netflix coming out, I think, this month.
Okay. I think so, too, yeah.
Have you seen Agent Carter?
No, I have not.
It's incredibly good. It's good.
You know,
by incredibly, I mean it's better than... it's better than Gotham. You know what I mean?
Somebody at work was always asking me if I watched these, which is, you know, if you listen to the show, you know I don't. But Agent Carter came on, and I watched I guess it was the first one, and I really loved it. Yeah. I wasn't alive at the time, but I like to see things in the 40s, because when I came along in the 60s, a lot of places in Texas were remnants of the 40s, you know, but when I saw it, it wasn't in its pristine. It was like dying and, you know, getting ready to be replaced.
Yeah.
And I always thought it was kind of ugly. Well, when I started seeing old movies in Art Deco style, God, this is beautiful. And Agent Carter, they showed them in that automat where they ate, you know, and they had all the sandwiches behind the dispensers.
Yeah.
Great fun. And I really enjoyed the first one. Well, then the other ones would come on, and I don't know, it's like if you listen to a record, it goes in one ear and out the other. It's like...
I've been paying attention. I like them. Now, the season finale just aired last week.
Yeah.
Haven't watched that one. I DVR'd it, but I've seen every episode up to that. And it's good. The characters are interesting. There's a character named Jarvis on there. He's Howard Stark's assistant. Really interesting character. I have fun listening to the guy. And,
well,
you know,
well, you know where the computer came from.
Right. That's exactly
it. It's not Sharon Carter, is it?
That's,
It's Sharon Carter.
Sharon Carter.
It's Cap's number one gal.
But she doesn't look like in the comic where she had the blonde hair.
Oh, no. Sharon Carter is today's version. That's Peggy Carter is like her mom.
Oh, you're right. It's Peggy Carter.
Yes, Peggy Carter.
From
Peggy
the 1940s.
Carter.
That's why it takes place in the 40s.
Oh, I didn't realize
Peggy,
that.
Yeah, she's If you've seen, well, I don't know
I
if you've seen it.
There is a
Sharon Carter.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
Maybe it's Peggy's daughter or something.
Right.
Or maybe
daughter.
It's not related
wait,
at all.
Wait. Now I'm all confused here. Sharon Carter was the one in the old Marvel comics. It was Captain America's girlfriend.
Yeah.
And she was Agent 13.
That's exactly
and
right.
And that's when Captain...
Yeah.
She was a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, 13.
Yeah.
She had long blonde hair.
Well, yeah. This woman's a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent as well. And it does say, at the end of every episode, it says Peggy
it
Carter,
Peggy
created
Carter.
By Stan Lee and Jack Kirby.
That is right. It's Peggy Carter, isn't it? But I'm talking about, in the comics, it was Sharon Carter.
Right.
But Steve, Captain America only knew her as Agent 13. He didn't know her name or anything. And she'd always appear and, you know, help him out. She was an awesome character. And at one point, she's at dinner with Steve Rogers, and he's got this big smile, and he's all happy. And then she said, you know, she's asked him, basically, why are you in such a good mood? And he said, well, I'm just trying to figure out how I can ask the girl, you know, I want to marry, you know, but I only know her as Agent 13. And then she basically explained that she couldn't marry him because of duty, you know, and they both had duty. And then Steve Rogers decided that was it. He quit being Captain America. And next thing you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. said, well, we did what you wanted. Now the whole world knows Steve Rogers is Captain America. And he walked away. And then the next issue, everybody's trying to be Captain America. S.H.I.E.L.D. needed him. And then he became Captain America again. It was kind of bitter. And that was the whole Sharon Carter thing. And I think at one point in the late 70s, she disappeared. But then she kept coming back in different incarnations. You're right, this is Peggy Carter, it's not Sharon Carter.
Yes, and this character, she was in the, I don't know a lot of Captain America comic book lore, but the very first Captain America film, Peggy Carter was in it, that was his love of the movie, his love interest in the movie, and then he died, but she was still there, you know? And so now this is just her story continuing
so Peggy
after.
Peggy Carter is the mother, this is set in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
This is set in the 40s,
so then Sharon...
before Cap was frozen.
Oh my god, now I just realized... Sharon Carter is Steve Rogers' daughter, and that's why she won't marry him.
Wow, but he doesn't know that.
Oh, I'm not even talking
about that. That is so inappropriate.
That is inappropriate.
Oh, my God. That's why she has blonde hair.
Oh, that's right.
I've never watched
another
one of
these
stupid
out
movies ever again.
Okay. Well,
can you elaborate? Because I don't even know about that part.
I just figured it out. Peggy Carter is the mother...
Sharon Carter's their daughter. They had a child, and he didn't know about it.
Oh, I get it now. Peggy Carter was the mother who Steve Rogers had the daughter with.
Yeah, and that's why she wouldn't marry him in the comic books. And Stan Lee and Jack Kirby didn't even know what they were writing.
So Captain America. Captain America had an illegitimate daughter.
Wow.
No, I'm joking.
Out of wedlock.
I don't know. Somebody lent me because of Dallas lent me the first Captain America movie.
Okay.
And I watched it, and I saw the Agent Carter there, and I just assumed it was Sharon Carter.
Hmm.
And that's one thing I always said was they made her hair red. But I just thought, you know, how they change everything for the movies and stuff. And I figured there wouldn't be an Agent Carter in the, you know, nowadays, you know, when they're doing the movies. So I figured she was just a 1940s girl. That's right, it's Peggy Carter.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
but then that's when I started thinking, wait a minute. She was, you know, Captain America's love, as Dallas said in the movie, and he was frozen in ice. And says, what if they had a
yeah,
daughter?
That would make sense, if it was
and
the
then
case.
In the comic books, when he was asking to marry, and she wouldn't marry, well, it's because she's the daughter of Captain America. He's in love with her. Oh, my God.
You know what? You know what could clear this up really easily? Is if one of us used the Google.
Yeah.
Hey, but we're not that credible. We don't back stuff.
We like to just make misinformation.
We do this on the fly and then we figure it out and we go, hey, you know, whatever.
We'll probably apologize for all this in two episodes' time and say, you know, we were wrong. Here's the real truth.
Oh, we're always wrong.
Or if somebody out there is listening, they could correct us and write to us and correct us maybe.
On the Facebook page because there's too much spam on the blog and I can't sort through it. So.
Well, what about Sergeant Carter from Gomer Pyle, USMC?
He's in there somewhere, man.
Like Sharon Carter?
And what about John Carter?
What about John Carter, Warlord of Mars?
No, that's more awesome. I like that. John Carter is the
Yeah.
So while we're on the subject of television, as far as comic book properties and television, it's kind of funny because we don't necessarily fit the popular demographic for comic book you know, readers, at least the like I say, the popular demographic.
Yes.
If a non-comic book reader, like my wife, such as, sees that I'm watching a show like Agent Carter, and she sees a commercial for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. She's like, hey, why don't you watch that? Only correlating that, that's a comic book, right? Why don't you like that? Like, you know, it doesn't work that way.
She
but that's
she
the.
She doesn't read comics?
I'm sorry, Al. But I do find it kind of strange that we all do, well, that we do watch some of the comic book related TV shows and enjoy them, because it's not completely different, you know,
yeah, it's a
medium.
World, man.
It's a different world. It has nothing to do with the comics, really.
They take too many liberties a lot of times.
That's how I take it. One is, I love the form. I love the comic.
And that's
form.
What I'm saying. We like the art form, first and foremost, I think, above a lot of the other stuff. But we still, and that's why we don't fit that demographic of somebody that just loves the characters.
I wonder what the demographic is. Is it just a regular person?
It's probably something that's just made up in my head.
There's a lot of people that love comics that watch those movies, and there's a lot of people that don't read comics.
I know that there's a lot of people that say, oh, I don't read the comics, but I like the movies. Yeah.
There's more people like that, I would say.
Yeah, a lot more.
Judging from sales on comics these days.
I thought, when I was younger, I always got excited when they'd have a comic property in a movie.
Yeah.
You know, I liked the Christopher Reeve, the first two Superman movies. There were some, I did like, but I just found that when they do put them on the big screen as a movie or a TV series, I don't enjoy it as much as the comic, with some exceptions. That John Carter movie, I absolutely love. I like the comics in that. I mean, there's some.
Did you like the George Reeve Superman from the 50s?
You know, I watched it when I was a kid.
It's on MeTV.
I know. Every time it comes on, I ended up turning it.
The Fleischer cartoons, and I know you're a fan.
Oh, absolutely. Big fan.
Yeah.
Absolutely awesome. And I have I learned a little more when I was reading that comic book history of comics.
Yeah.
They have a whole thing about Max Fleischer and Walt Disney and, you know, the start of the major animation studios.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of interesting learning about Fleischer and how he got his start and all that. And knowing
Kirby
that he went on to do the Superman.
Kirby worked for Fleischer.
Yeah,
Popeye.
Kirby worked for Fleischer Studios. That's right, because that's covered in the comic book history of comics also.
And when they moved to Miami, he decided not to go because he didn't want to leave his parents. Or was
that's what it was. That's why he stayed.
Like that,
that's what killed the Fleischer Studios.
What, Jack no Kirby Jack Kirby?
No. What killed
because
it was,
they moved to Miami.
They moved to Miami to get the cartoonists to leave New York. They paid them more money. They left New York because of unions and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So they could go to Miami and get it. You know, the weather's nice. It's a nicer place. But they couldn't afford to pay all those people more money that they were doing. And the other thing that was killing them was Walt Disney put out Snow White, which is color.
Yeah.
And it was a feature film. And then the Fleischers just realized they had to go into feature film business, and they weren't ready. You know, Disney was working towards that. And they put out a really good movie, Gulliver's Travels, which is black and white. It's fantastic, but, you know, his black and white didn't do as well. And then they started putting out the Popeye cartoons in color. And those were good, but...
AAP was... AAP the studio or whatever. So Allied Artists or something? I don't know.
It was still Famous Studios, but they got it later. But I'm talking about the Fleischers put out Popeye Sinbad, Popeye Alibaba, and the 40 Thieves, and there was another one.
Oh, okay.
Right. But there was three color cartoons they did, but they couldn't recover the cost, you know. They couldn't switch to color is what they weren't able to do. And then Famous Studios, which I guess was part of Paramount, basically took it. And that's when they got a different group. Some of them were the same animators, but they took them back wherever, Hollywood or wherever. And that's when the Popeye cartoons had that different look. The Fleischer brothers were part of Famous Studios as well, but the later one was without the Fleischers.
Yeah, all that stuff is like classic stuff, man. I really do miss that kind of animation because they're rotoscoped too. The Supermans, they basically shot it on film and traced it onto.
Well, that was the technique that Disney used for Snow White, that they started with Snow White, didn't
Snow
they?
Yeah, Snow White. But see,
that was a
both of them, when they did the rotoscoping, it was still, they did some drawing.
They did some drawing, sure, of course, and painting.
Yeah, when Ralph Bakshi did that Lord of the Rings cartoon in the late 70s. That was god awful because he did rotoscoping, but you could tell what he did was he filmed a guy. And they just traced it, you know, and there's a lot of stuff where they rotoscoped somebody, but all they did was just did a high contrast in red and yellow, you know, they had people in costumes.
Especially if you watch that Bakshi, or Bakshi, or however you say
Bakshi.
It, that Lord of the Rings cartoon, the ring wraiths, when you see the Nazgul riding around and they're just all black and cloaked, you can totally tell it's just
a
person. They did with that is just take out all the color.
Did you ever see the Bakshi Frazetta movie Fire and Ice?
No.
I did.
You did?
Yeah.
Would you like it?
Well, I can't remember it now, but I did see it. I would think it's better than. Do you remember the movie Rock and Roll and stuff like that? I mean,
oh, Rock and Roll.
Yeah, Rock and Roll. Yeah, but I like Fire and Ice.
No, that wasn't.
Was it? No, he said he think he looked better, but I don't know if it was the same studio.
Yeah, Rock and Roll was by him. What was it? Nirvana.
Cool World was
Bakshi.
So you should see Fire and Ice because I've never seen it. I know Frazetta was involved in some of the, you know, a lot of the drawing and stuff like that. But I was wondering. I think that one might have been rotoscoped too. I'm not sure if it was or not. I think Bakshi used that vibe.
Well, it was a costing. He did that on what was it? American Pop.
Oh, I never saw that.
I saw that. Somebody had HBO when it was on. It was okay, but. He was doing it as a cost because animation was extremely expensive and it's hard to do.
Mm.
And so that was a cost-cutting thing for it. But there's a bunch of great cartoons now. And animation, I guess, because computers are a lot more affordable. And that's one thing I always hear about was Golden Age animators were talking about. We never thought we were going to see animation come back like it did. Because they said that they didn't realize when, you know, in the Golden Age of animation in the 40s and stuff, this is, they thought that they were working towards something, it would be something. It wasn't cost effective. A lot of the people were making squat. You know, the cartoons are extremely expensive to make. And later on, I guess when people started realizing it, they couldn't get people to do that kind of work for that kind of money.
Hmm.
And that's when you started getting the really bad limited animation. They got worse and worse as it got up to the 70s.
I would say, and especially also in the 80s, they had, it was so many frames per second. You could tell a lot of that, those 80s cartoons that I grew up on, the animation was pretty sparse.
Oh, that's what I was going to ask you. Yeah, because I love the Golden Age. It's like Warner Brothers, like, you know, Bugs Bunny and all the other ones. And then you're right, with the 80s, like when they did Scooby-Doo and maybe He-Man.
Look at He-Man, G.I. Joe, and the Transformers.
Right,
all those,
they would cut down,
looks.
Yeah, the animation looked kind of choppy.
Yeah, but I will say the G.I. Joe cartoon was a little better than a lot of them. And what they started doing was they would design the cartoon and, you know, write the whole thing up, do all the character designs, do the storyboards, layouts. And then they'd package it and send it to Japan or Korea.
Yeah.
And
so all that was outsourced,
Yeah, it was outsourced, and the animation houses there were, you know, set up for it. So the animation was better. I know G.I. Joe, I was kind of impressed when that came out and I saw it. And, you know, like I said, the animation now, Batman the Animated Series, one of my favorites. I was staggered when I saw that. But Adventure Time, it's on TV now, the regular show, there's a lot of new animated pieces, the Powerpuff Girls, Dexter's Lab.
Are some of those, the newer ones, like Adventure Time, I wonder if they're digitally enhanced or assisted.
I'm sure.
I think they all are. And I know, what was that show that was on Nickelodeon? It was really good. Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Oh, that's a good, yeah.
That was a great one. But it was here in the United States, they developed it, designed it, did all the storyboards, and then sent it to Korea, and they animated Korea. The one thing about Avatar, on the DVD sets they were talking about, is the timing. Because I guess, usually on the cartoons, here in the United States, they dictate how much time, you know, between the scenes and stuff like that. And Avatar, they didn't. Avatar, they let the Korean animators come up with their own timing, you know, even though they had the storyboards and everything. But the Koreans came up with the timing that they would use, which gave it a unique, I mean, it was fantastic.
Never seen that.
I've got, my instructor passed away, which was a really tough time. And I got out of class one night, turned the TV on, and it was this cartoon. And what amazed me, it's about these people that are benders. It's the elements, earth, air, fire, and water. And every bending, it's a different martial arts style. You know, they're all Chinese styles, but like the water bending looked more like Tai Chi. The earth bending style looked like, I can't think of the name of it, but it's like Kenpo, the Japanese, the stomping, the short movements. Oh, look at that, they were real martial arts moves. And, you know, it's this kind of an ancient world. But I thought, man, this is incredible. You know, my daughter wouldn't watch it. She said it was fake anime. Well, it was done in the United States. But it got bigger and bigger. And they went to different, you know, the Earth Kingdom and stuff like that. And they had their own rail system that the earth benders could run. It was awesome.
That's cool.
And it was three seasons. I got all three DVDs. I watch them all the time. It's one of my favorite shows.
Nice. Well, speaking of comic book related shows, have you guys been watching The Walking Dead?
No.
No, I haven't seen.
Yeah.
You have? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Man, see, I have to say it's been getting good. I think we've had 3 episodes now ever since season 5 returned. We're in the second half of season 5. And it's so much better than the first half. Like, it's good. It's been getting really good, especially these last 3 episodes, man.
Well, I mean, is everybody still intact?
No.
Oh,
okay.
I won't. I don't know if how serious you guys are about watching the show.
Sorry,
so I'm just giving
you
a
thing.
The last episode I watched was when Beth was killed. That's the last. That was season end of season 5.
Yeah,
right?
It was the mid season break of season 5.
Oh, okay.
So that was the end of the first half of season 5. Now the second half of season 5 has started, and yeah, it's pretty brutal so far, but it's been getting really good. We won't talk about anything now then. Wait till Des catches up
time,
and then when Brooke's with us. We got to talk about the last couple episodes because they've been.
I may watch the spinoff because maybe that'll explain more, but I'm tired of 4 years.
That's what you were excited about. Was the
yeah,
I'm tired of 4 years of no explanation. Of what's going on.
I think that's the whole point, though, is that there's no... They're just not giving you any backstory.
Right.
You're just enjoying the ride, basically.
Well, I wasn't enjoying the ride. I want to know why. I want to know the why of the ride. I really wasn't
that's
enjoying
how you really
it
feel.
After a while. You know, it was just... Like, it was tense. It's a tense show and a rough show, but, I mean, is that the be-all, end-all of this show just to, like, show you how horrible it is? Give me something else.
I feel like
know?
It might be.
I think
I know what he means because there was times where I really liked the show. I never miss it. But there was times where I'm thinking, you know, I don't know. If they just stay at the farm this much longer, nothing happens. And then
it becomes, it's incredibly bleak for the most part, but it does get monotonous at points.
Yeah.
Like you said, on the farm. Season 4 for me was a little monotonous. The beginning of season 5.
But see, the thing is, I find it. Some episodes that I'm thinking are just drudgery and I don't want to watch, and then all of a sudden they do something, I get excited.
Sure.
I find out Rook has a complete 360 opposite opinion, and the episodes I find droning.
You mean 180?
Boring. Oh, yeah, that's right.
365, you think?
But,
okay.
Yeah, that's right, 360. But, well, see. He does the 180, and then I realize what he's saying, and I jump all the way back over.
So, he'll end up being the 360.
Right? Okay, gotcha.
But,
numbers.
But he's the complete opposite of what I think, because the stuff that I think is just mundane and I get tired of it, he feels his characterization is so. But I guess the ones where I like, he just thinks it's kind of cheap kick-ass stuff that, you know, is easy to do. But
I have to say, some of the characterization and some of the things that they stretch out, I have an issue with the dialogue sometimes on the show. I feel it can be really clunky. They try to be subtle in certain points, but it gets confusing. Or the characters just, I don't know. So it's just some of the way a couple of the characters are written doesn't seem to jive well with me. And it just,
well, it's a very intense show. But after a while, it's just like, you become numb a little bit.
It's
the
same old over and over. Yeah. I mean, you've been dealing with the exact same issue for 5 seasons.
I do.
It does get a little...
Well, like I said the last time we were all together, it just seems to me like, with exception of Rick's group, everybody you meet is just shallow people that they don't think in the long term. They're just out for themselves. And I understand the world has things like it, but it wouldn't all be like that. And of course, this last season that they're showing now, I'm starting to wonder.
It seems a little better. You know, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. Yeah. You got some good characters, at least some
and
seemingly good
natured
characters.
It's like Rick
characters.
Is the one now that's thinking that way.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. I guess the problem I've got with the whole thing, and I've said this way back before, was it doesn't seem like there's a... It just seems like they're going to be doing more and more of the same thing as long as it's popular and making money. I don't see an end in sight. Like Breaking Bad, you know, it went off for a long time and it ended. I never watched it, but...
Yeah, I heard it was really good, too.
Yeah, I saw one
so
episode.
Good.
It is good. My daughter was telling me about it. I watched one episode with her, and it was incredible, but at the same time, it was just like swallowing a box of razor blades. I didn't enjoy it. You know, I'm like, God, this is horrifying.
You know, I would think, from my personal taste, that I would enjoy The Walking Dead better if it was like kind of like Planet of the Apes, where there were movies. And the movies follow the storyline. But then one movie, the first part ended. And then it ends on a cliffhanger or something weird. And then it comes back a year or two later.
Okay.
And it's got another, but it's like a one graphic novel equals one movie. The second graphic novel equals two movies. The third graphic novel equals the third movie.
Well,
and so on and so forth.
I would say the show, but a television show, week after week, that's the Walking Dead show is capturing the essence of what the comic does, where it's a serialized narrative. It's not just one story that suddenly ends. Walking Dead's been going on for, what, 120 some issues or however long?
Yeah.
It's a continuing story, just like the television show is a continuing story. So they're trying to capture that same idea of it's just over and over again.
Yeah. You're right, and they do.
Doesn't have a definitive ending.
The thing is, it just kind of goes on, and they have little hooks that catch you, and then it kind of teeters out, and the hooks that catches you. And after a while, it's just basically flash, boring. And I'm thinking, is there an ending in this? I mean, is there ever going to, you know, resolve this and
go on? It goes back to me personally, when you can tell from what we're talking that I'm more of a story-based guy, whereas opposed to, like, maybe you guys, maybe more into characterization. So that perfectly fits what the mindset is, where I would just do the story, and a lot of people would fall for a character. Oh, I love that character. I hope they don't kill him. Oh, my God.
I just want to see how zombies die.
Whatever.
I'm a zombie guy.
You're rooting for him, actually. Yeah. I'm more of a story-based guy, where a lot of people are in the characterization. And that's what, and that's the thing with comics. That's why I like, you know, I like the short stories sometimes a lot better, because I just want to see
a good story. It's got a great plot, a beginning, middle, and end.
But like a book or a novel or whatever and stuff like that. It's just a different view of things or whatever. I just think they go on for too long, but I understand what you're talking about. It's like the comic book. There's characterization. You want to feel for the characters before they kill them, and eventually you're going to find something out. But even in the comic book, you haven't found out anything, I don't think, about what happened.
I don't think so.
Kirkman is yanking Major Chain, as far as I'm concerned.
He's going like this everywhere.
he's just kind of sadistically doing stuff with these characters and doing that, and he's just sitting there laughing and going like, I may never tell anybody what's happened.
I think that's what it is, Golas,
It's been 10 years, you know? I mean,
at the same time, it's a popular comic.
It is.
A popular show, so, I mean,
it works for a lot of people, you know, but not for this one.
Yeah, people want it, but I'm just, you know, you don't want to end it. It seemed like he's got a lot of stories to tell.
I believe in endings.
Do you think, I was going to say, it's almost like what today's Marvel's doing. It's like event. Every year is a new event.
So
that's why people are getting event fatigue. Basically, like, how many times? So you want, like, one event and, like, just have a normal storyline?
No, what I would like them to do is, instead of changing the characters, is create new ones. You know what I mean? Instead of making Captain America a different guy, or Spider-Man a different guy, create a new guy. But they can't do that. Why? Licensing and the popularity of the character and marketing and blah, blah, blah. And they're making money. You know?
Brand management.
Speaking of money. Let's take a break.
Is it commercial time?
Do I have to
pay the bills?
Yeah. It's just money. All right. We're taking a music break. We'll be right back, guys.
Give me a
Our most recent 20 episodes on iTunes. If you want to hear our older episodes, you can find them at our blog on bunchofdorks.com.
And that was from Hi Tomi. She's from Japan, and I like her. Dallas.
So we've all been reading a lot of comics lately. I've been reading a crap ton of comics, and a lot of it has been...
as opposed to a ton of crap comics.
That's right.
Exactly. Well, a little bit of that too, I guess. As I said a few episodes ago, I purchased a huge bundle of Image comics, digital comics, off of humblebundle.com. Got a massive deal. And I've been reading a ton of them, and I have so much books to talk about, but I just finished reading one yesterday, and while it's fresh in my mind, I just wanted to go over it really quick and tell you guys. I just read the first volume of God Hates Astronauts by Ryan Brown, and it is freaking hilarious. One of the funniest comic books I've read in a very long time, and it's kind of, it's like a superhero-ish, but it's a farce. It's all just completely written for kicks and for fun. And to be honest, I'm pretty sure Ryan Brown is just making it up as he goes for the most part because it's hilarious. But so there's this core group of superheroes. So you've got the best part is too. You've got all these characters in the comic book, and in the very beginning of the graphic novel, there's a page that says suggested voice talent, and it has the names of the characters. And who Ryan Brown, the writer slash artist slash everything else, what famous Hollywood actor or personality he thinks would be the voice for this character, which is hilarious. Okay. But it's made up basically of this small core group of superheroes. They're a team, like the Avengers or something like that. And the main guy is, his name's Starfighter, and he's basically this invincible and immortal superhero, and he can fly, he's strong, invincible, just does whatever, and there's Starior, who is his wife, and she has her wedding ring gives her powers, and I'm pretty sure she can fly and she can like shoot beams or something out of that. There's a character named the Anti-Mugger. All he wants to do is stop muggers. And he's dressed up, I think he has like almost like a luchador kind of mask over his eyes, little thing, and all he wears is that and like some little spandex, like tight little spandex potato smugglers. And he's got a super hairy chest. It's hilarious. And there's a character called the Impossible, which is a girl, and her helmets, her mask is like completely upside down, and apparently she can just do whatever. That's why she's called the Impossible. Really interesting, intriguing character. And there's just a ton of cool characters. There's a character named Kraymok. He's the other one in the group. He's the mix between... He was like a scientific breed between a circus strongman and a seal. It's crazy.
Okay.
But anyway, so it's just completely made for laughs, and it's every page is just hilarious. Every bit of dialogue is just the funniest jokes. So the main idea of the first issue is the main villain, who is named John L. Sullivan, is a 1920s like boxer.
There's a will.
And he's boxer. Yeah, he's the that's why it says for suggested voice talent, John L. Sullivan plays himself.
Oh.
He's a 1920s boxer. He's got like the big old handlebar mustache, and he has a group of trained bears, like ninja, mystical ninja fighting bears that he has with him. And so they're in the midst of this huge battle. John L. Sullivan beats the absolute shit out of the main character, Starfighter. Now, Starfighter's immortal. He can't die. But John Sullivan beats his head so bad, it swells to mammoth proportions, and it's absolutely disgusting. And he has to live the rest of his days pretty much with this. And his wife, Starior, can't take it. They're in bed getting intimate, and his big, floppy, like, 5-foot-wide, fleshy head is, like, falling on top of her. So she ends up having an affair with another character. And it's all just played from there, and it just goes on and on. And like I say, it's almost like Ryan Brown is making it up as he goes, because it's just incredibly funny. And my favorite part of this comic is all of the sound effects are absolutely hilarious. Like, every single one, instead of saying pow or just whatever, they say absolutely outrageous stuff. When Starfighter is getting the crap beat out of him, it says, like, God, no, and please, just punch sock, just stupid, funny stuff. There's one, the last one, it says, it says when he gets punched in the face, and the sound effect says, fucked! Right, gets right in the face.
Oh, cool.
And I'm not really doing it justice by doing that, but it's absolutely hilarious. The art's not bad. It gets better as it goes. But it's just, if you enjoy a good book with just a ton of laughs, I would completely suggest it. It is hilarious. The collected edition has, I want to say, the first 4 or 5 issues. It also has a ton of cool extras. It's got 20 pages worth of backstory by different artists. And just the origins of each of the characters, their little 2-page origin stories out of each character by different artists. There's two 24-hour comics, which is basically something in the industry where a lot of artists get together and they draw a 24-page comic book, 1 page per hour, for 24 straight hours. And Ryan Brown did 2 of them, and they're both in the collected edition. So it's really cool.
Nice.
So, yeah, God Hates Astronauts. Freaking hilarious. Funniest comic I've read in years.
Yeah, my daughter got an issue of that. She was telling me about it. She liked it. I've heard him in an interview. You know why he called the book God Hates Astronauts?
I don't think so.
I was going to ask you that. Why?
He was saying the reason why is when he was a kid, they were talking about the American astronauts. They were flying, and one of the commentators said they were flying to the heavens. And then as a kid, he started thinking, well, you're not supposed to be going to heaven if you're alive. He says, God must really hate astronauts, which is where the title came from.
Okay.
Well, that's cool.
I didn't realize when I saw the artwork of Sean. I've heard him talk. I hear people talk about it. I like the title. I wasn't expecting the artwork to be as good as it is. It looks a lot different.
I think there's like some continuing, like there's a lot of continuing in jokes. But one of the sound effects is just Shaq, like SHAQ, like Shaquille O'Neal. That's one of the effects. Someone gets shot here and it says cocaine. Like, it's just random. One, when Starior uses her little magical ring to shoot someone, the sound effect says magic with an exclamation mark. It's just hilarious.
Is it Image?
Yeah, it's Image because it was from that Humble Bundle that I got.
What year is it from? Is it still being published currently?
I think so. Probably issue 9 or 10 now.
Right.
It's really new. This came out, I think, last year.
He's been doing it for a while, though.
He's been doing it for a while, but the collected edition, I think, just came out last year, this one. Yeah, it's absolutely hilarious. So,
right on, man.
Oh, and there's a character named Admiral Tiger eating a cheeseburger, and he's a tiger eating a cheeseburger, and he's in charge of a whole planet worth of crab people. And these people, they're like, from the neck down, it's like a normal, proportion, right-sized man, and then the head is just a crab with the crab legs and eyes and everything.
Wow.
It's hilarious.
Hallucinogenic.
So, who's got
who's
something?
Next? Well, that's a great album, by the way.
That is a great. It's one of my favorites. Hey, Yancey Street. Last time I was here, I went through the dollar boxes and I found JSA All Stars number 3.
Can I look at it?
Of course you can. The cover caught me because it's got a picture of Dr. Fate, which looks like it's done on a computer. What's that? It's pretty slick. And behind it is an old drawing of Dr. Fate. It looks like it got the Ben Day dots in the back, like, you know, an old vintage comic.
Oh,
and
that.
I opened it up, and I didn't care for the front story. You know, it's
yeah,
the kind
why.
Of comics I don't care for. But I looked in the back, and they had, I thought it was a Golden Age story. Come to find out, it's Darwin Cook, wrote and drew it.
Yeah.
And it's nice. And when he drew it, it's not quite the Darwin Cook style. He tried to make it look like an old Golden Age comic, but it's I'm guessing that's 6 to 8 pages, and it's, I really enjoyed the story. It was quirky. It was Dr. Fate like. The female with him, which I always took as his wife, is an equal in all ways, you know, with him, and which I haven't always seen portrayed. Dr. Fate was always my favorite Golden Age character. I would say he's one of my favorite characters, but I haven't liked it when people try to draw him in the modern age. But in this one, it's nice. Again, I enjoyed it. When I was nice. There, I also found Dr. Midnight. What's the JSA
All-Stars?
Number
6.
6. Same thing. It's got a new drawing of Dr. Midnight. I think they kind of revamped his costume a little bit. And then a Golden Age drawing behind him. And it's got a back. What's the back issue? Is
Look who it is.
It's the front story again. I'm sure it's fine, but I didn't really want to look. But the back, it's the guy that did 100 Bullets.
Eduardo Risso.
Brian Azzarello.
Brian Azzarello and Eduardo Risso.
Looking like Frank Miller.
And
kind of sort of.
They didn't draw it in the Golden Age style. It looks like 100 Bullets, but the story was actually pretty neat. It was unique and well drawn. Dr. Midnight was a character that I always liked his costume. I liked the idea, but I always thought he was kind of lame. What happened was he got to where he could see at night like you could during the day. And I thought, well, that's okay, but so what? But in this one, I haven't read that many stories in the Golden Age, but I'm guessing he's got some type of shadow power that, you know, blinds other people, you know. Anyway, it was nice. And then I got a third one.
And another.
It's Hourman. This is JSA All-Stars number 5. Hourman is Rex Tyler, another Golden Age character. Cover, again, caught me. I guess they kind of revamped his costume a little bit, which I didn't care for. This front story's okay. But the back story is by Howard Chaykin. One of my favorites.
I love how these short stories in the back are by these great popular artist too.
Our man is Rex Tyler, who was a pharmacist, and he basically came up with a pill that gave him superhuman abilities for an hour. So whenever trouble would happen, he'd take the pill, and then, you know, take care of everything. Anyway, I really enjoyed the story. It's still drawn in Howard Chaykin style, but I saw some other ones there, but the covers didn't catch me, and I didn't really pay much attention to them. But I really like the DC Golden Age heroes. I just haven't always liked them when they brought them back into the modern times, you know.
I must say that looking at this, God hates astronauts on the... is this an iPad or a Kindle or what is it?
It's a Nook. It's just like a Kindle.
It's like reading an Archie Digest kind of sort of, you know?
Right?
Can you tap really the panel and it gets bigger?
Yeah. I think you might have to double tap.
You can move it around and stuff.
You can do all sorts of fun stuff. It's neat. I would love to get... I want to get an iPad that has, I think it's like a 10, 11-inch screen.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a 7-inch screen, so it's a little smaller. But
you can still see the
you
page.
You can still see it clearly. I'm just saying. It might be a...
You can. Now, these are all...
If you want to see panel to panel,
I did.
Just tap
I flipped
it,
that
yeah,
sideways and I double-clicked
and that,
on
that,
it.
That, to me, is awesome.
Here's the part with the main character's big old smashed head.
Oh, I saw some weird... I saw some weird crap in here when I was looking. Some guy's ripping somebody to pieces or whatever, and then it's like...
There's a guy with a little baby arm on a guy.
A baby arm growing out of his chest.
Yeah, that's
very
crazy.
Strange.
Yeah.
So, who's next?
Okay, I'll do. Once again, I got a... For some reason, which I don't know why, it's been a long time since they put out a regular issue of Afterlife with Archie, my favorite recent comic book. I don't know why. Frank Avedi is doing War. I don't know why he's not doing it. At any rate, same with Sabrina, too. I don't know why. It's been months. But they've been putting out these magazines, Afterlife with Archie, which basically has... It's all a reprint book, but it's got a reprint of one of the issues of Afterlife with Archie from the first series, from the first arc.
Now, that comic's still around, still going strong,
around.
Afterlife with Archie?
But they don't come out on a regular basis for some reason. I don't know why. At any rate, I buy these because they've got the most beautiful reprints in the back of the old... what was it, Red Circle Comics from Archie, and this one's no slouch either. There's a backup story by Al McWilliams, Gray Morrow, Frank Thorne, and Jesse Santo. So this is about the closest it comes to these days to getting like an old Warren comic book, an old creepy or eerie. So they're up to issue 4, and the stores don't seem to carry them. They're special ordering them for me, but I got to tell anybody that likes that stuff that this is some primo stuff, and I definitely like. I'm looking forward to every issue that they put out. Like I said, 4 have come out so far. I can't wait till the next one.
I love the reprints in here too. It's reprinted. They're printed in black and white, these reprints, but it's on like a tone grayish paper.
To make it look like an old comic book. Or
yeah.
The page number in orange at the bottom.
Yeah, the page is...
I love that.
That's awesome. Like, it's so cool that they did that.
Yeah. So I've been checking that out lately. That's like my favorite book. Here's another thing, too. My friend actually is going to score a couple of issues for me, but I haven't seen them yet. There's a book that's come out, but it's not on the stand, and the distributors aren't picking it. It's called The Creeps. And it's basically like a take on... Old Warren magazine, but it's called The Creeps, and it's got like all these like, you know, puns connected to Warren, but it's not being distributed by Marvel, and you can only get it online. So we found out about it. I don't know how I found out about it, but I just saw it there, and it was special order from the guy, and if it's a comic shop, you can order X amount of copies for a cheaper price or whatever. But I mean, I guess a lot of people are doing that. Some people are doing that now because they don't want to go to the distributor, because the distributor, I don't know if they want you to put out, put out all sorts of money or have to print out X amount of copies or whatever. But my friend actually scored a couple copies, and the first two issues are going up. They started out at $3.95 or $4.95. They're going up to $20 now from the publisher because they're going out. They're selling out. So
dang.
Yeah, whenever I get them, I'll talk about them. But I know one of them's got an old Frazetta cover that I never saw before. So it was some painting that he did years ago. But there's like, I don't know what the deal is. You know, there's a lot of stuff that's, I'm sure, is being published, self-published or whatever, that, you know, it's hard to see or whatever, you know. But this one looks pretty interesting, so I'm hoping to get it soon. I think it's a magazine. I know it's got some... an old Rich Buckler story in it, and I know it's got some Frank Bruner story in it. And there's
what's it called again?
The Creeps. I don't know who the publisher is right now. I know there's a website for it, so I'm looking forward to that. But you know, but yeah, so far Afterlife with Archie, best comic book as far as I'm concerned that's being put out. It's just sporadic though.
It's a nice package. It's a really nice package.
It's like you said, it's like a modern creepier eerie. It's like a modern Warren magazine, and I can see why you like it.
The front story is material I think you already read.
It's a reprint, of like the first arc of Afterlife with Archie, but it's nice to look at.
Yeah, and it's a little larger, and the paper stock's a little different.
And the paper stock is a matte finish.
Yeah, I like that paper stock.
It's old school.
It's old school. It's
and
neat.
Even if it's old school paper, you know, blah, 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 but the colors, everything is still there. So
colors still looks great, but it feels like an older comic. It's great.
And the backstories, and they did them in black and white, those are sweet.
So the guys who were involved with this, I know Frank Avila, but I think the guy who writes it is... what's his name? Roberto Aguirre Sacasas. Spanish, you know, which I should know better. No, don't say that. Sacasas. This guy's into this stuff. So he knows his old school magazine. So he's making all us old guys that are, oh, I thought you want, oh, Dez, yeah, yeah. He's making all us old school guys that love this stuff go buy this stuff. So Archie's an interesting publisher these days. They're doing a lot of, you know, worthy things that people should be looking out for. I think they're putting out the old MLJ. Is Archie putting out the Fox and all that stuff? Is that for another company?
Yeah, no, that was they had Red Circle, but it was Archie.
They're doing the Red Circle characters again.
I think.
Yeah.
Well, no, actually,
just the Fox.
I wonder if it is Archie or if it's somebody else. I think it's Archie.
Yeah, because they're the guys who were involved with you know, all those characters or whatever. But yeah, those characters were popular in the 40s. They've been revived I don't know how many times. They never really hit big, but it's always nice to see them when Impact Comics did them in the 80s, and Red Circle with Rich Buckler as editor did them in the... Impact was in the 90s. Red Circle was in the 80s.
Yeah, Red Circle.
And then DC got a hold of them.
Well, that was Impact.
But they redid them again. I remember buying an issue of The Hangman. They came out like maybe 6 years ago, but I think they finally lost the rights to it or something like that. But yeah, old school superheroes that, you know, they try, but they can't. But anyway, this book here.
We're not going to have time to talk about that.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah,
what happened to Betty and Veronica?
They're in there.
Oh, they're in there?
Yeah, they're in there, but some of the characters are dead. Like Jughead's dead.
Jughead's dead?
Okay.
Spoiler. I do have a big... We're going to dedicate an entire episode sometime soon to... I got this great book called Comics, The Complete Collection by Brian Walker.
Okay.
And it's basically the history of the comic strip from the late 1800s. Kids. Yeah, probably that. To recent. It's only a few years old, this book, I believe. Yeah. But what I'd like to do in the future... On an episode of the future, we're all going to list off our favorite comic strips, and then maybe go into review this book and go into depth on it and talk about it, because it's massive. It's a good 600-plus hardcover, you know, and it's pretty much all pictures. It's all pictures, man. It's all comic strips.
And remember what Criswell said, the future is where you will spend the rest of your life.
Well,
or something like that.
Al and I went to, we're dollar box diving one day, and I found this.
Oh.
What?
And
is it a Becky Cloonan?
No, it's cool, though. I like Dampin' Ocean.
Wait. Look in the front. I think the writer?
Gail Simone.
Yeah, Gail Simone.
Oh, Gail Simone wrote it.
The one I thought was a newscaster.
Oh, man.
That's Gail Guay.
Did they have another one? I like
Gary
that. Sarkin. That's nice. I love Dampin' Ocean.
I've seen this on Facebook.
And what is it?
It's Conan and Red Sonja. Yeah, I guess we should say that.
Dark Horse Comics.
Yeah.
This is 2015.
But the thing was, the cover really caught me, the drawing. It's when Conan was a buccaneer with that, I can't think her name's pronounced Belay, Queen of the Black Coast.
Yeah, Belay.
It's a Dan Pinotian cover, too.
Yeah, he did the inside.
Well, he did
like
the
him.
Interior.
Oh,
and
man.
The interior is just as good. But I'll tell you, and I hate to say it, I bought it because of how Red Sonja looks on the cover in that chain mail bikini.
She's hot, man.
Whenever I see her, all I can think of is Red Sofia.
Yeah.
It's a parody of Red Sonja from Cerebus the Aardvark.
Yeah. I always liked Red Sonja. I mean, I've always liked Red Sonja a lot. And when Frank Thorne did her, I thought was the best. She's kind of a little bit more fantasy-based. I know in the 80s they were trying to bring her up to date, because, you know, what human being would walk around in a chainmail bikini with a sword fighting
when
with leather gloves?
Did.
Yeah, well, it was...
Dez would.
Oh, not me. I'm not going to look good in chain bikini.
But they tried to change her, you know, giving her leather armor and stuff like that. It just never worked. But looking at this, even though it's silly, you know, it's comic books, it's just fantastic. When John Buscema was drawing Conan is when, you know, Conan was sailing with Belay. And their crew was, you know, a bunch of black Africans that looked like out of a Tarzan, you know, TV show or movie. But and the ship was kind of an ancient looking ship. This, and they draw it more like a modern clipper ship.
Shaft,
Shaft.
Right, there's an advertisement for Shaft number one in this book. Sorry.
And, but they drew the ship that way, and the crewmen, it's kind of a mixed crew, which is how it normally would be. And but Red Sonja shows up and fights, and I can't remember the other woman with her. It's pretty interesting. The story was interesting.
That's issue two.
Is it?
Yeah.
You don't have one.
No. I guess I found it at a dollar bar.
I gotta say, man, Dan Pinotion's art is
really
looking
good.
The bomb these
I like
days.
I like his art.
I used
a lot.
To not like the guy back in the 90s, but
no,
his style
no,
is
a lot better,
his
yeah.
style has certainly progressed. And I haven't seen any of his current work, but this is awesome.
Much. He doesn't do much. I picked up a few books a couple of years ago and then it stopped. I think he's doing animation and stuff.
Now
like
I asked Fred Van Lente wrote a Conan book for Dark Horse also. Fred Van Lente, isn't he the guy that wrote Comic Book Comics? Anyway, the reason I brought up when you first pulled this out, I asked if it was Becky Cloonan because she's an artist that did a few of the really good recent Conan Dark Horse comics.
That's the ones I want because I saw those on the internet and there's no comic store around me at the time.
Fantastic art, man.
But I'll tell you, hers, I saw those and she draws in her style. It's not trying to be the Conan, Frazetta, John Buscema, Barry Smith style. Which, I mean, I like those. But I was really interested that they let her do that. And I can't find those issues. I found out they're in a couple of trades, which I am going to find. On the internet, some guy was lambasting that Conan's a good comic. More they have. I guess he didn't like the style. But I think that was still Buccaneer Conan. But to me, it looked more like Highlander, you know, the movie. It was kind of a style like that. Which, again, this one guy complained about. Des knows I've been looking for them for a long time.
If you don't like it, don't read it.
I understand.
Life's too short.
The guy has his opinions. It's like when we talk about comic book movies, and I really don't care. You know, that's fine. You may not like every style of what they do, but how many people you know like everything? You know,
Mikey.
Mikey likes it.
Yeah. No, Mikey hates everything. You see, he won't eat it. He hates everything.
That's right.
And they were shocked that
he
ate cereal. We're talking about, do you know that? I guess they still show that commercial once in a while.
Go ahead, explain it to me. Dallas.
Yeah,
Mikey was from a life series of commercials for a life cereal.
Dallas, when you were an embryo.
They had those in the 80s too.
They showed them in the 2000s.
Yeah, that's right. Mikey hates everything. A different Mikey, or is it the same Mikey? But as
I think it's the same one. I think they showed him as he got older.
Now, there's a magazine that they just put out. My friend told me about it. I saw the cover, which I might have to look for at a comic shop called, it just came out, it's called The Savage Sword of Criminal, and it's Ed Brubaker and
Sean Phillips,
and they're doing a knockoff of an old Savage Sword of Conan with a cover that looks like Boris Vallejo, and inside
awesome.
It's like a combination of like a Conan and I guess a detective novel or something. I gotta look for that.
That's awesome.
It looks hilarious. I saw the cover, it looks hilarious, but since I haven't seen it or bought it yet, then can't talk about it. There's a lot of books that I've seen that I can't talk about.
But
we're
going to have to put it on the blog.
We have to put it on the blog
anyway?
Okay.
So there you go.
This is definitely better than the movie. Remember how Red Sonja with Brigitte Wilson and Arnold was supposed to be... I thought he was supposed to be Conan, but he was some other type of character. So this is like the real Red Sonja and Conan.
Yeah.
So this is good. This is pretty good art too.
I like that Pinotion
art is
good.
Really good.
I like that.
The story was good. I really enjoyed reading the one issue.
Right.
Well, gentlemen,
start your engine.
It's been real, but it's time to go. I would like to thank, well, first and foremost, you guys for joining me at my pad again. You know, to record an awesome episode and talk about some of the glorious comics. You can see all the comics that we talked about on our blog. And I'm sure Don will post them on the Facebook page also. So go friend us on Facebook and start up a conversation. We're always on there. We're always creeping around on the Facebook page, lurking. Other than that, just keep checking for new episodes. We'll have another one up in about a week or so. And until then, take care of yourselves and
read more comics.
To find Al's other podcast, Slow Robot A-Go-Go, or his blog, Destination Nightmare, as well as Dallas's webcomic, The Mighty Blue. Check out the sidebar at our blog, bunchofdorks.com.
And
click on the Cyclops!